Hello everyone, welcome to Tribal Gatherings. My guest today is Helen Ryan. Helen Ryan is a retired distinguished advisor at Acton Chemical. During her career, she formulated some of the best industrial additive packages in the world. Hello, Helen.
Hello, Mark.
How are you doing now?
That's a nice introduction.
Thank you. Yeah, we're sat here today in this lovely place on the Thames in London, and Helen's recently retired and she's, really settled.
Yes, loving it.
Yes. Yeah, so I suppose we'll start from the beginning. Like, what was the subject of your PhD?
It was the synthesis characterization of novel molybdenum carboxylate complexes. So that was for catalysts for polymerization, supposedly. So you had to do glass blowing and put a little bit of monomer in there and a little bit of the new material and see if you got a polymer forming. That was probably the most exciting bit. But I think, like anybody who does a PhD realizes, it's just training for running projects. The discipline, the perseverance, the analysis. Yeah, I think whatever the subject, the subject wasn't really relevant to what I did, but the training was just invaluable.
Well, very, like, infrequently is, like, directly relevant to your job, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Yeah. I think maybe more nowadays people are picking stuff that they're interested. But for us, back when I did it, which was finished up in 1989, it was just a means to an end rather than all about the end.
Which uni was it?
It was in Maynooth, which is just University, it's part of University of Ireland. And it's where they make priests as well. So that was interesting.
Okay. Yeah. Wow, yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Yeah, so then you moved to, like, Ethyl, it was then.
Ethyl.
Was it your first job?
First job. Yeah. So it was in New Scientist, the ad at the back. Yeah. And at the time in Ireland, people just didn't stay. Like, everybody left because the economy was so bad. Yeah. It was before all the nice European Union money came in and built everything. But and the country's just... Because in the country, if you educate people, then you can only keep them control for so long. So the place is amazing now. But then everybody left. So when I was coming over in the plane, I think there was three of us from Maynooth coming over for interviews. And so when I went to Maynooth, I went to Ethyl, I was interviewed by a guy, Roger Scattergood, and I couldn't understand his accent. And I had a broad Irish accent and he couldn't understand me either. We were looking at each other going, but I got the job. It was like, and that was started 1989. So I retired last year, 2023. So 34 years. Flew past.
What was your kind of position in the first year?
Researcher. And it was looking into novel succinamide dispersants for crankcase applications, because there was this Meinhardt patent that everyone was trying to work around. Yeah. And you needed, there was a 5E test that you needed a certain amount of cleanliness for. So they were putting in boron and phos into the dispersant and trying to get those bound and in ratios that was outside the patent. So I remember Roger, God rest his soul, had wired his own house and it burnt down. So I had to go to the Sauge for the pilot plant. And I think I'd been there about 3 months. So off I went to Sauge. It was supposed to be for a week and it ended up being for a month. Because, you know, getting stuff from the lab to the pilot plant is different. I remember watching one, we used to get up really early in the morning to do it, and watching one run, and I grinded my teeth so tightly my tooth broke. But it took a month to get it right. And then when we got it right and it was all looked good, I needed to get it back to the UK for a 5E test. And I said to the guy, ship it out as quick as possible. And they went, yes, ma'am. And they put it on a ship that was going via South America. It was like, oh my God. So they moved me out of crankcase then, and I went in. They just set up the industrial group. So it was myself and Trish Corbett in the industrial group, two of us at the start back then, maybe in 1991. I don't know how many people. There must be about 60, 70 people in the group now.
You were there from then on till the end?
Yes. I loved it. Yeah. I loved it because with industrial, it's so different. Like, you could have your main job, hydraulic gear, and then you could be fiddling around with turbine and compressor or paper machine oil, or there's always something new and different to be doing.
What were some of the first things you were working on? So obviously wind wasn't a thing back then.
Well, no. It was hydraulic, because there was occasionally something will happen and the whole platform will have to change. And in hydraulic, there was these servo valves that were put in for control of the power, and they were blocking. And the reason they were blocking, because you had acidic rust inhibitor, detergent and water interacting and forming all this gunk. So you had to either take out the acidic rust inhibitor or the detergent to stop the gunk forming and blocking the servo valve. And I think Denison were the first ones to come up with tests for that. There was a Denison filtration test. And then there was the ISO filtration test that Dave Sutton of PAL worked on, man who was brilliant with filtration. And then Mr. Poirot in Denison, real character, came up with the T6HC, which was a test with a piston pump and a vein pump, and you ran it with water, dry and wet. And
that's still going now, isn't
still
it?
Going yeah. strong, yeah. yeah. I think he's recently retired. I mean, again, what a great man. But it was so funny because to us, the lubricant industry is so important. Yeah. You know, we think there's major players, but to the OEMs, there's a guy in a back office who's in charge of the lube spec, and you go, it's just not important to them. The lube is not a critical factor in the design of any. The viscosity is basically all that they take into account. I think that's changed, but before there was some guy who had been in quality before or something, you know, looking after lubes, and it wasn't always the major producer of equipment who set the specs. It was people who had equipment that where things were critical, like water ingress, or say with Flender for micro pitting, or you know, that these guys weren't the biggest manufacturers of gearboxes or pumps, but they're the ones who cared the most where things were more critical to them.
Okay, so if it failed, so then they'd set the specification based on like a field failure.
Exactly, yeah. Or things, or for instance, like in 2007, 2008, when the economy just hit the skids and people were cutting back on costs, but the world was changing because China was coming into the system, and the idea that 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, and everyone would go home and machines would be shut off, that just didn't happen anymore. So machines were working for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And so the failure mode, say for elastomers, was happening before the warranty was run out. So then they would have to pay for the repair of the machines, and that was eaten into money when nobody had any money. I mean, Germany was on reduced working hours. So then the tests just started coming out of nowhere. And the equipment manufacturers were running the tests. And as you know, running tests, establishing repeatability, reproducibility, having reference oils, they just weren't set up to do that. So they'd run one test and go, yeah, that looks okay, but it would be in an oven that had a plus or minus 4 degrees variation in temperature. And so, therefore, at that stage, that became all about, it's not about the lubricant, it's about getting the test under control. So different challenges depending on what time, era, you know, what was happening in the world at the time.
Yeah, I see. So getting the test, so it's like repeatable enough that you can make claims or proof that it is actually,
exactly,
the oils actually perform differently.
Exactly.
In it. Yeah.
Because you started, like the two first products, Hytec 521, which is the ZDP-based hydraulic oil that was compatible with water, or Hytec 307, the product designed to pass the micropitting test. So when all the new tests came out, like the 1,008-hour seals or the paint test with water, you'd run 307 and it wouldn't pass. And then you'd buy all the oils and then nothing had passed. So you'd go to Flender or Grakajewski and go, nothing passes. And then you'd realize you're reformulating, but nothing can pass this test because it's out of control. So the main lesson from that was work with people in advance and try and that sounds obvious, but it's not obvious because like the OEM doesn't want to give more favorable information to other people, one company over another person. So it's trying to get industry groups together. Like with Denison, that was the first time you had everybody from the oil industry and the additive industry in meetings together discussing the pump. And we selected an oil for a round robin and you share the data. And I remember being at Denison for that meeting, and it had those, you know, the ceilings with plaster squares on it. Yes. And we had like an hour only for the meeting, and one of the plaster squares fell down on my head and there was all bird poo on it. I know. And everyone was like, oh, you okay? It's like, doesn't matter, just get on with the meeting, get this done. I know. But it was great because those people were, everybody cared, you know, and our industry isn't, you're never going to make a fortune really. It's not like banking, but everybody's decent, nice people, and they want they want to work together, and they, you know, and when you can get a situation where people can work together, then it's always good rather than silos and
And when you can get those working groups, and well, there's lots of different type of working groups. There's some working groups that kind of just coast and do nothing, but if you get like a good one which has like a very clear aim to like make a test for people, like you say, the round robins and stuff, they work extremely well.
Yeah, and if you have someone, like I mentioned, Dave Sutton, the filtration guy, or Mr. Poirot for the pump tests, or, you know, you work with Freudenberg on the seal tests and the new setup there, everybody's bought into getting a test that works. And that's all you need. Formulating is easy then if you've got the tests that are repeatable, reproducible. You know?
Exactly, it makes your job a lot easier.
Well, you know what it's like. Yeah. You worked with Afton for a while, and then with the SEW test, getting that set up. I mean, I had badgered you so much, you slept in the same room as the SEW rig.
Yeah, we were so commissioning this new SEW seals rig, and it ran for 20 hours and 4 hours off or something.
Yeah, but like, for 216 hours. Yeah, 20 it. On, yeah. Four off.
And we'd have to like monitor it, and we just like ended up sleeping next to the rig before it was commissioned, before it was shipped to the UK to make sure it worked okay.
But it did. We never had any issues with that rig then.
It had that specialist, it's at the time.
Reverse.
The reverse, what were we doing? Like it's like capacitance and things in it, so it would have the active kind of brakes, the brake resistors, and then we'd harvest the energy from those and reuse it and try and do them out of phase. And it worked really well, didn't it?
Yeah. And that was one of the last projects I worked on, to have a SEW Flender and ZF capable industrial gear synthetic technology. And there was never any issue with the test. Yeah. It was just designing the components together to be... Because that's severe, going forward and then reverse for 2016 hours. Yeah. So you had to select your technology carefully for that one.
I remember what we were quite proud of at the time with that is because we knew the different designs people had taken to do the rig. And we knew one of the biggest oil companies had gone a completely different way and their rig didn't work. these plucky guys in Afton managed to pull it off. Yes.
Because one of the lessons from that was, because we worked in the same group, and I think it was, you know, you've all these rigs and they're based in a rig area, and then you have people formulating and you send an oil down and it doesn't work and you go, why didn't that work? And the realization that you needed an engineer embedded in your own group who could liaise between the formulators and the people in the rig area. So it wasn't, it's not us, we're all working together. And you spoke the same language of both sides. So that was invaluable.
Oh, thank you. No, it was good. I enjoyed it working there.
Yeah, was good.
And it's good. It's like, I find with the kind of people running the rigs and stuff, when there's a problem, it's always usually something small, isn't it? And it's something like, so you just have to spend time with them. And
that's true.
You know, the amount of times that it's something that they just subtly done, you're like, well, why did you do that for? And they're like, oh, because that's what I thought. And like, oh, no.
But if you... the devil is in the details. Yeah.
And no blame. It's just like, we're just going to make this better, you know? I think one of my tricks was always to just a big packet of biscuits and just sit in the, like, room and just
chat it out.
Yeah, yes. Listen to what they're doing and just full respect and,
Yeah, and that's important, that they feel... that everybody feels not threatened. Then you're open up to stuff.
Yeah, so it was like... So you started at Ethal, and your main job was, well, more recently then, is formulation. So yeah, how did you go about formulating a new oil? How did you go about? I think you made 521. How would you go about formulating that one?
Well, one of the main important things is that the tests are running okay, and then that your components are manufactured to the level that's needed for whatever you're asking it to do. So, for example, there's lots of different ZDPs, and they're used, zinc dialkyl dithiophosphates, and they're used crankcase, but it's not that much of an issue because the treat levels in crankcase are huge and they don't have really high temperature bench tests. Whereas for us, there was things like the Cincinnati Millicron thermostability test or the hydrolytic stability test or, you know, the test before you'd even get to the pumps. So you needed to have a product that had a good deal of overbasing so that you could have a breakdown from the overbasing. By the time of the end of the test, it would be, say, mildly acidic rather than starting off with something that was acidic. So understanding your components, how they're made, the specs that have to be put on them. And for industrial, that was a lot tighter than for other areas. So the guys of the having a relationship with the guys of the plant was huge because I discovered throughout the years that engineers, you have to ask them the right question to get the right answer. You could be right beside the question that you should be asking, but they're not going to, and it's not they're not trying to be helpful. It's just you've asked them one question and they're going to tell you that. Yeah. So knowing and working with the guys at the plant, so you're making each individual component as well as you can to the spec is very important. And Afton, we made 99% of our own components. So understanding, say, sulfurized isobutylene has been around for years, but it looks nothing like it did when I started formulating. So for industrial gear, when I started, you had a driveline product that would treat at, say, 5.25%, and then you would have an industrial product that would treat at 1.5%, same products. Then things like flender specification, micropitting, seal compatibility meant that you had to have completely separate products. And you were still working with the same type of components, but they had to have a tighter spec for industrial. And they had to demulsify away water and stuff like that. So, again, good tests, really good components, understanding your components, and then the team that you put together to develop a product is just key. Like, especially in a place where we worked like a matrix organization. So you're trying to get people in other groups to do stuff without any direct, they're not reporting into you. So, and again, I felt this during lockdown, having relationships with people like the guys in Richmond or in Sauget, where our R&D center or our manufacturing center, if you haven't met people, then trying to get them on board and to do stuff, it's much more difficult than, say, you spend a month in Sauget. I've formed lifelong friends after that month, or going to Richmond once a month, you know. And so getting people on the team, and also laterally, we started hiring people that weren't like us, cleverer than us, which a lot of companies don't like doing. You know, they want people just the same. And so you have really clever people come in. So surround yourself, get as many really clever people on your team and just let them off. And that's, then it's just joyous because you're learning, like, all the tribal stuff and the understanding of what's happening in the tribal layer. And the, because when the tests were out of control, we were formulating new products using just the MTM and the MPR rig and those, you know, is it forming a tribal layer? Is the tribal layer durable? Does it lower friction? You know, and then you kind of cross fingers that when the tests come back in line, you will pass them, and we did. Okay. So, yeah, there's lots of different aspects there.
Yeah,
but
I didn't realise that the kind of getting the chemical like tight and in control in the manufacture was like a big part of the job.
Key. And that's why the plant do such a good job. So it's kind of, you need to understand what you're asking them to do, like what linkages you want on the sulfur chains, or and the other thing is, because industrial is smaller, we piggyback in other areas. So maybe the driveline or the ATF group. So if they're coming up with a new antiwear, you need to be influencing people to make sure that antiwear will also work for you. So again, relationships, tests, you know, not making it onerous for someone, making it a win-win, that if they develop something, it's also useful industrial, because it's very rare that something would be PMN'd for just industrial use only, unless it has to be like dispersants or stuff like that.
It's just like a big kind of juggle of different areas, lots of relationship management.
Lots of relationship management.
A really good team,
yes.
Making sure the tests are in control.
Yes.
And then once you've got all those kind of things in line,
yes.
The job's easier, but then how would you kind of the balancing and what would happen kind of then if it went once it's all kind of set?
Well, again, going back to what we were talking about, is the work that people like MyLife and the OEM guys were doing is no surprises. So, and that doesn't just happen overnight. You have to work with people so that if they're planning to make a change, they call you first and say, there's an issue with the supply of some material in a seal, we need to change it. We want to work with you to see, do we need new technology or will the older technology work? And if it doesn't work, is that acceptable? So you're not because I think it was 1994, 95, we developed a new product for the Flender spec, and then the seals changed from 168 hours to 1,008 hours, and you go, holy moly. you can never have stuff like that. It will happen because it takes a while to build up relationships, but preempting that and just working together. And it's a bit of a pity that the industry is a bit cagey about oil companies getting together and, additive companies getting together, because it's always better when everybody works together. And there's enough business to go around for everybody.
That's true.
You know, there's no... Occasionally, one person will have the dominant power, but the other person will catch up.
Yeah. I'm always surprised on these chats in the podcast, how often seals come up. You know, I kind of always knew they're kind of a critical part of many components. So the first thing to fail, aren't they? And the oil starts to leak and the compatibility issues and stuff. And it's amazing how, this simple component becomes, you always think about gear, when we give courses, always gears and bearings and stuff. But actually, when you look at what the problem is and what people are working on, it's always seals.
It's always seals. And again, it's if you look at the reason, a lot of it is dirt ingress and particle ingress, because you look at the environment a lot of that works in. But then the lubricant was not a huge amount. It was maybe 10-15%, but that's enough to make it worthwhile to really invest in your components and what you're doing. And now for, say, gear oils, I remember reading a paper saying that gear oils need to be hydraulic oils in their thermostability, but with some EP protection as well for that impact loading. And that's the way things are gone now. And also, say, with bearings and the move to journal bearings. So you have these bronze alloyed and you need the multi-metal compatibility. So things shift along. And then again, that's working with the plant to make those new components.
Yes, to make sure you're kind of ready for those.
It's so right.
Fewer surprises.
Yes, and that's exact. And so that I think the company started doing technology platforms. So you'd build a platform that you could put with this and this and this. So when a project actually starts, there's a platform already identified. So you may never use it, or you might use it the next year. But it's an understanding of how to put stuff together rather than... Because projects were taking so long because you were trying to build platforms within the projects as well. Yeah, and that's...
So you have some baseline you can work off.
Yes.
And, yeah.
And you have different groups, the fundamental groups and who are... You're constantly interacting with... and the process groups making different products better. So you're definitely not working in isolation. No. You know, and you have your little group, but you're pulling out of everybody's knowledge and expertise all the time.
Yeah. And in that, in your kind of formulation role, we talked about what you found the hardest. And what was your favorite bit about it? What did you really enjoy about it?
It's if you have an idea of something that you think is going to work, and then you try it out in the screening tests and it looks good, and then you run the test and it works. It's such a buzz.
Yeah.
It's just, I know, it's like, yes. And that's why having all the screening tests is such a good idea. That's a big buzz. Working with the OEMs is always a big buzz as well, because they're normally, like I said, fairly good characters.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. What was your favourite product you worked on?
My favourite product was probably the wind turbine area, because, again, that was really gaining traction in 2007, 2008. And you had the guys who were doing the standard industrial gear or standard area, and they were getting, everything was getting shot and production was being moved out of Germany to other places. And you could just see these people were being beaten down by cost cuts. And whereas the wind turbine area was, you know, really, there was money being pumped into it and there was really good engineers working on it. And you could really be creative there. And it wasn't all about cost cutting. And so, and you got to work with really interesting people in the, you know, different OEMs, you know, from the seal manufacturers, the gearbox manufacturers to the wind turbine OEMs, and got to travel around the world. It was, I think that was my favorite. And also, there wasn't an industry. And then all of a sudden, there is this whole industry. And you can approach it from any angle. You know, nothing was dictated. You just had to understand what was needed to pass the test. And, well, passing the test is important, but working in the field is a million times more important. Yes. Yeah. And if you're out there and you're problem-free in the field and you have something, some new test come up and it's not working, then I always spend a lot more time on that. If there was... Thankfully, I'd never had any problems in the field. But if there had been, then that game over, you know, you stop.
So that would be, I suppose, the wind turbine products are the most premium industrial products. I think they still are, aren't they? Definitely, yeah. The most expensive.
They are because they're over-formulated. Like for the white etching, you know, the subsurface distress. And so you want the really good tribal air and you want that to be there all the time. And so the amount of hours that are spent testing that to make sure that works. For Vestas, when you go visit Vestas in Denmark, the motto over the door is failure is not an option. So you're like, okie dokie. Yes. Yeah.
Having a blank slate to formulate with.
Exactly. And then having done it 3 or 4 times, because one of the last products was the next generation wind turbine technology, and just having the luxury of thinking about and having new components as well to work with, that was just great.
And less, I suppose, cost pressure and things maybe.
Yes, exactly. And then the different groups, you know, the fundamentals groups and the tribology groups and the, you know, it's just because everybody enjoys working in the wind turbine area because it's high profile. Yeah. So you don't have to influence too much to get people to want to work with you on that.
In terms of, you know, we see some similarities now with like the EV side is kind of got lots of traction. But from your point of view, does much of like technology spill over to the EV space from like wind or industrial gear?
A certain amount. It's like if you're trying to lower friction, we have a cast of characters to use from. So definitely the understanding of what to do, you know, whether you want to raise it or lower it or what you... And probably more relevant for me would be the robotics area. Which is, I think, is one going to be the next huge area, yes. And again, that's an area there are some products out there, but again, seals are a huge issue for robotics, because if you have an Amazon warehouse that's moving stuff around and you have a leakage all over your package, you know, that nobody wants that. No. All the expertise on seals, all the expertise from Slideway on friction control. On really judder.
Like really accurate judder. Movement.
Yes, on stop, start, on... So that's an area where all the brain power is all there, all the expertise is just pulling all those people together and then getting in with the OEMs as well. Because at the moment, I think a lot of the Japanese OEMs perhaps are not that open. But so you'd have to find out who is, who wants to work with you.
Yeah. Are there any robotics kind of products...
There tend to be either PAG because of the inherent friction qualities of that, or synthetic molybdenum-based.
Front and centre.
Yeah, okay. But I think some of those have seal issues.
Okay, yeah.
And so the next generation, you'd formulate to get rid of the seal issue.
I see. Yeah, so the seals last a bit longer.
Yes.
I suppose it's like rapid and like non-controlled motion where we're used to like a nice thing rotating at the same speed all the time.
Exactly.
And then suddenly you've got this thing that kind of jerking movement.
And if you think about the SEW rig, yeah. The reverse.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that would be helpful there. You run some tests on that as well.
Yeah. I suppose, if you made a test for it, you'd probably just have some like random, build in some like randomization movement. It's just not always going the same way,
Exactly.
So it's just like move forward a bit, move backwards a bit,
Forward
a bit more, move backwards a bit more.
And the thing about the parts on that is you're not penny pinching with the parts because, you know, with the elastomers and unless it's cold temperature and you have to use NBR, but it's mostly FKM and so they're better quality.
Yeah, the premium seals. Yes, okay. Yes. Yeah. So they're less likely to just break on their own.
Exactly. So you're not fighting the quality of the materials.
Yeah.
Everything is okay, so you can, what you test is a real result then.
Seals again. So the seals is like the formulation, you know, we've seen a few of the formulations of the seals and they are like the lubricant and there's so many components and they're formulated really tight. And what I always find interesting about the seal formulation is, like I say, like it's formulated on a knife edge, you know, it has this performance attribute, but if any of those components or any of the elastomers or anything, if they stray out of, they degrade in some way, the performance degrades quickly. It's not like a small change. So it's like
huge.
Any change to the seal is bad.
I remember at the start, we had batches of seals for the static seals. And you think, how important are static seal tests anyway? But the elongation of break at the top of the batch would be completely different than the elongation of break at the bottom of the batch. So you had to say, we need a uniform batch. Like it was as simple as going back to that. And if you don't know what you're talking about with respect to seals, then you don't know what you're looking for, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a huge learning curve.
Yeah.
So I think the QC on seals and elastomers now is a million times better than it was.
I remember we tried to set up, I always think about this project, we got the seal formulator, I won't say which company it was, but and the idea was we'd set up this huge project and we'd formulate the oil and the seal together, you know, within bounds. You know, you won't be able to completely formulate new seals and new lubricant. But the idea being you'd be able to edit both at the same time.
Yes, yes.
And it's this beautiful framework we set up. But for some reason, it didn't go, didn't it? I can't remember why. I think someone left and, you know, someone at the seal company left and it didn't go. But that would have been such a good project.
Yeah, and I think that's where we were at about some of the components for HS&E reasons couldn't be used and they was needing to design new ones and a cooperative kind of working together, which is exactly what you want.
Exactly, yeah. Instead of viewing the seal as like this black box,
yes,
and them viewing the lubricant as a black box,
yes,
just open up,
exactly,
and just be like this move these about and see what happens.
Exactly, and then when you get a failure, you go, oh, what's that for? You know, say one head would fail and you'd look into it and you'd understand what had happened rather than these results that were all over the place that you had no idea what was happening.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's just so much better.
What was the most challenging project you worked on?
I think going back to when we talked about the test being out of control,
yeah,
because they'd gone from the DIN SRE NBR 28 seal, which was a week at 100 degrees to 1,008 hours, and there was no reference oils. And the paint test, like you had a water-based paint being run in a test with 5% water in it, and you're like, surely this can't be right. And one of the things, you know, the evaluation of the paint was somebody drawn these lines with
the scratch. Yeah.
And you think, well, a 6-foot German is going to do a very different scratch than a 5-foot woman in our lab. And and I remember at that stage, they moved me to an office way down at the end of the building that no one ever passed. And it was just full of paint, those Q-tip paint things. And also the micropitting test, you had to last the whole 480 hours.
Stages, yeah.
Yeah, and then
without
it was you that worked out that or said, well, after the first 180 hours, it's related to the quality of the gear.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with the lubricant.
Yeah,
I was like, oh my God, I didn't know that. And then we had an industry meeting with Dr. Gajewski present and with FZG and they said, yeah, that's the case. So the test was changed.
Just two
load stages and load stage 10. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you're good then. Yeah, because after that, you just might be chance. It would pit anyway.
Exactly. So that was so challenging that. It was just, all the different tests had issue. And I think the industry has learned from it now is, you can't come up with a test and just plop it onto somebody. You have to have some R&R data or some...
Yeah, exactly. And prove that's a good test first or work with them. Yes. And I think it's like a mindset as well with, as an engineer, like a test engineer, they're used to like variability and things. Yeah. And it's difficult to define. Well, you can define it, but they don't... Frequently, it's not defined. And no one likes showing error bars because it's boring and it shows your test isn't very good or whatever. Yeah, sure. But as a chemist, you're used to seeing... very absolute results from like an NMR or like a mass spec or something. Yes. That's the functional group. That's the methyl chain or whatever. And then suddenly you've got this test that could be like all over the place. And you know, it's like two kind of worlds colliding really.
Yes. Yeah.
And that trying to bridge that gap is always kind of what I've been working
on. Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then doing the field trials and seeing that it works in the field and then working back and understanding how important that gap is in the test.
Yeah, exactly. And how the test is definitely relevant to a failure you've seen or you hope not to see.
Exactly. Exactly. And the other thing I would say is important is if one person mentions something that you haven't heard of before, take notice. If two people mention it, like people who know what they're talking about, then act.
Yes.
Don't wait around to see if it gains traction, because if it's been mentioned, like, and for instance, Weiss etching would have been that one that we should, not we should, but the industry perhaps should have reacted a little bit quicker to that.
Yeah.
And because once you know the answer, you go, that's obvious.
Yeah.
And again, going forward, it'll be interesting to see where the next failure mode comes, because there has to be a failure mode somewhere, right?
Yeah.
And if it's pushed subsurface and white etching is now resolved, or at least you can screen for it, what's next?
I think it's going to be, it's like the, you know, if you think of bearings and gears and things, well, elastomers to some extent, you know, their design can't be optimized anymore.
Yeah.
You know, they're optimized, that's done. The geometric size is and shape is the same.
Yeah.
So the only way they can go is new materials,
yeah,
which completely change all the additive reactivity.
Well, yeah, like the journal bearings.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or the or coatings.
Yes.
And both of those will have a huge impact on formulation.
Totally. But the coatings could have solved the white etching, but it was too expensive.
Yeah.
So that's what, and then when people mention coatings, you go, coatings, that's what lubricants do. So we have to make sure that that FOSS tribal air
It'll change everything.
Exactly.
It'll change everything, like just overnight. So if there's like a coating that appears on a bearing, thankfully they're all fairly old-fashioned. They're like the carbonitriding or a DLC or something. Stuff you've seen, there's nothing that new out there that I've seen, you know. And some of them do help a lot. You know, we see some coming through the lab and they help a lot, especially with white etching cracks. And it's amazing what they'd like turn it on and off, you know, really quick.
Yeah.
You know, but well, it boils down to money, isn't it?
But the fact that they've switched to journal bearings seems to have eliminated the high-speed shaft.
Are they in use now, the journal bearings on wind? Oh,
yes.
Wow, cool.
Yeah. And working well. And probably because for wind, the interesting thing I think is when they'll move to standard industrial gear, because for wind, the sump temperature is 60.
Yeah.
So you say you're operating maybe 90, I don't know, but it's lower temperatures.
Yeah.
So the journal bearings with the older EP chemistry is okay.
Yeah.
But if you go to standard industrial gear, the operating temperatures are much higher. So if you put journal bearings in there, you're definitely going to need the new type of EP system that's much more thermally stable.
Okay, so it's not going to corrode the,
exactly,
the coatings.
And
when we
were doing the immersion tests, and we did then some on the Cameron plinth rig, we did some dynamic testing as well with the different materials up to really high temperatures and across the tribofoam range, and worked perfectly.
Yeah, so like who is the most like fun people you've worked with? You've mentioned some of the German colleagues. And
like when you're traveling, like I got to travel to places I would never have traveled before, or if I wasn't working for the oil industry. So you go say you go to America first and you're like, wow. Yeah. And when I was going to America, when the cars were huge, like, and it was different, you know, and it definitely seemed like a culture shock. Now it's not. And then you get to go to, say, China to meet our Chinese colleagues out of the Beijing office and out of the Shanghai office, and they're just so helpful and so, like, anything that to try and facilitate to make everything a success for the meetings and the and interactions with the OEMs and with the customers, and you get to realize that basically wherever you go, people are kind of the same.
Yeah, really nice and
helpful and yeah. and want for the best and but it's still interesting and fun meeting the different people and what they try and show you to do. And
you've seen some characters come through the industry in the last 34 years.
Oh, like characters are good, but then it can go too far sometimes. Yeah, but just, like I said, really, really nice people. And then there's people that passed away that you worked with, you know, and it's always so sad when that happens. And it's life, but it's just, it makes you so aware of how lucky we are to have our health. And
exactly, live every day, Yeah, so I suppose, like, I think Lucy, like, who works with me, she had this. I asked, you know, we talk about you sometimes in the office, and because you had like a big impact on my life. And I asked, what would you like to ask Helen? And she wanted, like, from your career, what has had the biggest impact on your life? You know, and I think she means like your kind of personal life or something from your like career side.
I think it's the friends that I've made with work, like people who I'd be friends with forever. And just keeping in contact with them and working with them and the memories of, like, we were working on one big project with an oil company in the States and we're all in a plane and I thought, oh, business class of the States, hello. and Rania, a really good friend of mine, was running the project and she's like, okay, all meet beside the main exit door at the, because there's room to sit around there because we're going to start working. I was like, what? And we worked for the whole 7 or 8 or 9 hours, what it was, but it was great fun. And one of the stewards brought us over a bottle of champagne. I was sitting on the floor working away drinking champagne, and you know, it's just those memories that you make. Or talking about people who passed away, there was a guy, Dan Large, who was the business manager. So it was myself, Trish, Vicky, and Dan was a businessman. He was based in the States, a young guy. And we travelled all over the States. And, like, tornadoes going on. You'd be in the middle of tucking into a steak before I was a vegetarian. And they'd be like, tornado alert! And you'd have to go down to... And he did an ad for 521, get ready for wet conditions, with Noah's Ark in it. And it won best ad in Lubes and Greases or something like that, you know. And then it was just magic moments like that, you know, working with people.
Meeting people, like, different experiences and, like, all the amazing people you've worked with.
Yes, and especially, like I said, in COVID, that really became obvious to me that you think, because you're stuck in your house and you think, wow, I've been to some really amazing places that the guys now aren't getting to see because they're stuck in. So I hope people are starting to travel again, that they're not just doing video conferences or whatever, because the face-to-face and the...
I hear, like, that from, like, younger people joining the industry now is, you know, they are disappointed that they don't get FaceTime with the more senior people. So a lot of the senior people will be happy to work from home. And the younger ones are going in every day to the office, but they just Zoom in and things every day or whatever. And they just don't get the...
That's so important.
Yeah, they're like, I don't know, the osmosis of the knowledge or the meeting the people and having as much fun. And they just feel like they're not getting the attention they were kind of promised, if that makes sense.
No, it totally does. And even just... I remember Mike Lewis was in charge when... And Mike is just one of those great leaders. And you don't realise how lucky you are to have people like that, but you'd be at the coffee machine, he'd stand and have a chat with you, and you'd just go back to your office in cloud nine. You know, you'd be boosted for the day. And to miss out on interactions like that, yeah.
You can imagine just sitting in front of your laptop all day in this empty office, and it's so dire, wouldn't it?
Yes. Yeah. It's not good.
I can see it. You're having those side conversations are so important, aren't they? Those little kind of throwaway comments. Oh no, they've done that before.
Love that. When we had, you know, we'd be in the group and we'd be passing each other, and it was great.
Exactly.
And when the guys from the States would come over and they'd be in meetings and it was, it's important that you don't put rules and stuff going, you can't attend that meeting or you can't, just the cross-pollination is so important.
With the ideation meetings we used to have in the pub, they were brilliant. some of the ideas that came out of that were like brilliant. I still like think about them.
You know, it's like a great idea.
Yeah, just let like clever people just roll and chat.
Or it's like, didn't Apple have those boards on the corridors that you could just write ideas on and stop people and have a chat?
That's good. That's a good idea. Yeah. Well, that's why they're the biggest company in the world, I suppose. They realise that how important that is.
Yeah. And the other thing is communication. I saw this video of Warren Buffett, the guy who bought Lubrizol, saying, what's the most important thing if you... And he said to be able to communicate.
Yes.
And just to get scientists now talking together and communicating and not working in silos, so they're developing those skills so that not only can they can develop the product, but they can take them to market and work with the OEMs, and you know, so you're not just one little tiny role, you can spread around and do lots of different stuff.
So it's like, if you think about, like, we go along to different companies and give courses, and we see like the turnover, you know, like obviously a very blinkered view of who we teach and things, but it's like the turnover is very high, and you think then how much of the job is just passing on knowledge to the next person and then to the next person, and how much kind of in between, like, good work do they do, and how much knowledge is lost, you know, when people leave and things. And you're like a shining beacon of someone who's stayed in the same place, and you know.
Well, people could call that madness, really. It's like, but and also thinking, like, for the first 3 or 4 years, I really did not know what I was doing. You know, to give people room to grow and make mistakes, and then and they will deliver. They definitely will. Just time
and like giving them. Yeah, like you say, so the budget and space to try different things.
Yes, and work with clever people outside of their group.
Key, and give them the right tools. I definitely, not a big company, but with my staff, is just like help them as much as possible, you know, and just give them everything they need, help their development, you know, and just, they just do amazing things you couldn't imagine.
Oh, wow, that's just brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it.
A whole new company forming.
Yeah. Oh yeah, so I suppose, like, as like a fun thing, what's what are you doing at the kind of moment in your like retirement?
Well, the main things, like, there's so much chaos in the world and so much madness, is to focus on the people I love and to hang out with them and to spend more time with them. And my mom is 92, so, and she's fish the fiddle. She'd buy you and sell you. So. And to go over, spend time with her, and then, speaking of fit as fiddle, I want to get fit. So I've joined the gym over there, and I'm doing reformer Pilates, playing tennis, and there's all these like elderly ladies, like, I'm an elderly lady too, but they're even more elderly, and they've invited me to join their tennis team, and they are just, listening to them is a joy, you know, and they're so good at tennis, but if you hit the ball away from them, they can't get to it. So I still have to work out how to not hit the ball directly to them.
So that's a game of tennis.
Yes, but it's just, it's all, I love it. I love it over there. And so getting fit, hanging out with my loved ones. And,
oh, that's beautiful.
And I think COVID taught me, you don't need to be doing lots of stuff. And it was a really valuable lesson, like running around the place doesn't make you happy. No. Just going for a walk, doing some exercise, hanging out with someone, having a cafe Nero coffee in the morning with my partner. It's like, I love it. I used to always think, I wonder what those people who don't go to work are doing when we're at work. And you know, I know what they're doing now. They're going, whew, they're gone.
That's myself.
Yes.
calm.
Yeah, the road is calm. Everything's calm. Yeah, I'm loving it. And I feel very, very fortunate to be able to just enjoy life like this now. It's great.
Keeping fit and keeping fit, playing like tennis and. Are you in any like groups or anything or like?
Well, I'm playing with the ladies.
And oh, I like committees or like outside of sport or.
Committees.
Oh, I don't know. Like obviously not WI, but like you know something like.
Well, that's the next phase. Yeah. Is what I do to, kind of not give back because it sounds cliched, but I was thinking maybe chemistry tutorials or biology tutorials. But it's like I started doing biology and the amount that's been discovered since I did my degree in 1983 is like, oh my God. So I'm kind of educating myself.
You'd be a great like speaker for people wanting to become chemists in schools and things. You'd be brilliant at that type of role. I don't know what, it's probably got something. I would definitely as a mentor as well. You'd be brilliant at all that.
Yeah, you don't want to influence people too on Julie though, because they're like, oh my God.
Yeah, no, it'd be like an inspiration to see like how far you've gone and like, you know.
I've really enjoyed it all. And like I said, what a great industry.
Yeah, so it's like going back to like the industrial side then. Where do you see the growth areas of industrial lubes in the future?
Definitely robotics. Yeah, that's a huge area. Because that's like wind turbine. It's a whole area that didn't exist before. You can design three or four different types of robotic products. It doesn't have to be one, and you know, and try them out. And so I think that's huge. The other thing that would be important for industry is just keep an eye on the ball. Yeah. What's going to happen?
What's happening next? Yeah. What's coming through?
Yeah. Because I think, you know, when you develop all these products and you have them all waiting there and people go, what's next? And I know mine, I've said, you know, the iPhone doesn't come along every 5 minutes. You know, it's just true. But you look for the small...
Yeah, small increments, things slightly hotter, slightly faster.
Exactly. Yeah,
bigger wind turbines, for example.
Exactly. New coating, new material.
When they come in, yeah.
So nothing, far from the robotics, nothing huge I can't think of, but just keep an eye on the small stuff and be prepared for it.
Do you still read any like industry magazines or anything? Do you speak to Minoff or do you anything? Do
I speak to, say, Trisha or Vix, but not really, no. No.
Okay, well, what do you think the challenges the industry is going to face in the like coming years?
I think retaining people. Would be an issue, and keeping people motivated and interested, and because my age group watch people work for life, and we work for life, especially I'd say women who had self-imposed glass ceilings on them. You know, you're like, there's definitely the testosterone effect where men are like, I can do this, and women are like, oh my God, I can't do it. You know, it's very different. But for going forward, I don't think people will stay in the one place for forever. So trying to keep them there, going back to what you said, so that they're not just taking information in and then going off, that there's some delivery.
Yeah, that they stay long enough to have an impact. And hopefully, ideally you want an employee to stay with you as long as possible, they have their own like personal needs or their own development. I read this like, you know, I spend a lot of my time, not a lot of my time, but I spend some time learning about the younger people and what they kind of want from careers and stuff. And an interesting one is they don't really want like a long career doing the same thing. Yeah. They want to just have an adaptive enough and to learn lots of skills that will mean as things change, they can always be employable, if that makes sense. So that's kind of...
Adapting to the environment.
That's it. So things are changing extremely quickly. It's no longer you want to work at the same company for the rest of your life. I want to have lots of skills that I can take to lots of different industries depending on what's growing and what's coming around the corner. Yeah, exactly. Which is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. And all these skills, like the ability to digest a lot of information, analyze it, understand it, or even just not even project management. Yes. So important and transferable.
Well, so a lot of it is like people skills as well, isn't it? Just being good with people, and like that's what a lot of project management is, that isn't it? Just being good and lifting up the phone and talking to people, and
not communication being, is so key.
Not being coy and just being generally organized, you know.
And no news is not good news. I mean, it's like, if there's whatever's happening, just tell people, because it's immediate. Even if it is bad news, it's immediately less bad by everybody knowing about it, and people want to help.
Yes, you're right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Do you like miss the industry at the moment, or the people, or?
I don't miss. I think I did my time, yeah. And I could see the young people coming up, and you think it's time for somebody else to be doing it. Like, and the people I'm still in contact with, and I kind of, like, people talk about phase three of life, and so what I'm kind of doing is looking at what did I enjoy in the other phases, in my phase two, which was the working phase, and then applying that to phase three.
Okay.
And just say, it's a whole, because it's not like it was when my parents retired, or maybe my grandparents. You know, you were older, and the world had roles for you, and you weren't allowed to do stuff. Now you can do anything you want. It's so exciting.
You're as fit as a fiddle, you can do anything.
I'm fitter than a fiddle, Mark.
I was always like, you know, as you retire now, and if you want to take up a hobby with the internet and things, it's like you can, you know, before, if you want to take up, I don't know, like kite surfing or something, you'd have to like buy the magazine for like a few months and like learn about it, and now you can just go online and go, right, kite surfing, watch a YouTube video, right, buy the kite thing or whatever, go down the beach and find your local club, and it's all really
that's
easy.
That's right, and end up in France. Hurrah! Yes, or even like Richmond adult education down the road.
Oh, yeah.
The amount of courses you can do there, and they're all subsidized, and it's amazing. Like, I did a pottery course. Tick.
How'd that go?
Well, not so well. That's not my forte. Or even I was thinking of the South Bank going in volunteering, doing stuff there. Like,
yeah,
I love theatre.
South Bank Centre.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's just, it's, and again, it's a lesson for life.
Yeah.
If you want something, you can get, you can have it.
Yes.
Yeah. And so, whatever you, be careful what you wish for. So, because you can get it.
Yes. Yeah. Well, what do you wish to do next? Dare I ask?
Well, I don't have any plans.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, keep doing what I'm doing,
yeah,
and just things will morph, hopefully.
Brilliant. Yeah.
I know.
Oh, I'd love to see you in like a mentoring role, or even if you joined it, well, you'd be brilliant at like charities and stuff, and I'm sure you'd join these kind of boards and things in the future.
But I'd be good on boards, Mark.
Oh, I think you'd be absolutely fantastic.
I think it's a lot of head banging on the table going, what?
Yeah, I hope you do take up a mentor role as well.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Is there anything you'd like to kind of plug or say or anything before you kind of sign off?
No, I really enjoy doing this, and it's lovely seeing you again.
Lovely to see you too.
Really nice.
I also say, I think you're one of the most influential like people like I've ever worked with. And I really appreciate seeing you, and it's like really nice.
Oh,
you are. Like, you're such a brilliant chemist, and like such an amazing like, well, engineer as well, and like, yeah, no, I've really learned a lot working with you. It's really,
well, yeah. Those were glory days, weren't they?
All right. Well, yeah, well, take care and good luck with everything.
Thank you.
And yeah, well, goodbye, everyone. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.